If you would, go ahead and open up to Matthew chapter 12. That is the first text and primary text we'll be learning from this morning. Last week, I spoke about reflecting godliness in our money. And I didn't know it at the time, but I this week kind of decided to do another aspect of reflecting godliness. And so I'm not sure exactly how many parts that I might continue this idea through, but maybe a couple more. So this morning I want us to focus on reflecting godliness in our speech. Several months ago I spoke about having godly speech, or using our words to encourage in a godly fashion. And certainly there is a little bit of overlap because we are dealing with speech this morning, but I want to look at some different things about speech than maybe I focused on last time that I spoke on this topic. This morning I would like us to focus on more of what does Jesus have to say about the words that we use, not so much how we are to use our words. And we'll talk some more about that this morning. Did you know that the average male speaks 7,000 to 10,000 words a day? That's a lot of words. I don't count mine up. I didn't tally mine up every day and average it out. I am probably not an average male anyway. Some of you might think I do more than that. Some of you might think I do less than that, but whatever. Did you know the average female, now guys, be smart about your reaction to this. The average female speaks 20,000 to 24,000 words a day. That's a lot of words. Either way you look at it, as men or women, we're saying a lot of stuff. And I don't know if that number trends upward or downward now that we have emails and texting. I don't know if that means we're actually saying less or if we're saying more in the times that we would have not been saying anything. But we say a lot of stuff, whether it's verbally or through our nonverbal language, the way we present ourselves. We're just communicating all the time. And God certainly has some important things for us to understand about the way we actually use our words. If you would, if you haven't already, turn to Matthew chapter 12. We'll be dealing with verses 33 through 37. Matthew chapter 12, verses 33 through 37. Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For the tree is known by its fruit. You brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak what is good? For the mouth speaks of that which fills the heart. The good man brings out of his good treasure what is good, and the evil man brings out of his evil treasure what is evil. But I tell you that every careless word that people speak, they shall give an accounting for it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. I'm reading from the New American Standard this morning. So if you have another word, just know that that's the translation I'm using. The first thing that I think of, and I feel like is pointed out in this particular context, is that the tree is known by its fruit. We're going to work through four things this morning that I believe these verses show us about our words specifically. And what I mean by this is, look in verses 33, verse 33 again. Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or make the tree bad and its fruit bad, for the tree is known by its fruit. So, depending on the kind of product that the tree yields, really shows you if that tree is good or bad. Certainly, this is an idea we see several times in the Bible. If you would turn with me to Proverbs chapter 18. And with each one of these points, I have two verses that are specifically pulled out. One as maybe an additional reference, and the second will usually be an example of some sort of the principle. So here's another verse to help us maybe clear this up. Proverbs 18, verse 24. A man of too many friends comes to ruin, But there is a friend. Wait a minute, that's not the right verse. Where am I? Well, it seems I wrote down the wrong verse there. Well, I don't know what verse I wrote down. Sorry about that. But the idea here is that a person is really known by the things that are said. You know somebody, whether they're good or evil, a lot of times by the things that they're spouting off all the time. I think each one of us can think of an example of that. You probably have a coworker or a friend or somebody you go to school with that you either think really highly of or you think really low of, just purely by what comes out of their mouth. You may know them, you may have known them for years and years, or you may have known them just for a minute, but you're able to draw that conclusion by the things that they're saying. And certainly we see an example of this. If you would turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 6. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, and we'll look in verse 7. Second Corinthians chapter 6, verse 7. In the word of truth and the power of God, by the weapons of righteousness, for the right hand and for the left. Now here Paul has been talking a lot in 2 Corinthians chapter 6 about the work that he has done with them. And he begins saying that he's commending ourselves as servants of God in much endurance, verse 4, in afflictions and hardships and distresses, and beatings and imprisonments and tumults and labors and sleeplessness and hunger, in purity and patience and kindness and the Holy Spirit and genuine love. The beginning of verse 7, he says, and in the word of truth. So he has this big old list as why they've been able to know that they're servants of God. And he lists one of those things as being in the word of truth. Paul was able to point to himself and show that because of the things he was saying, he was either to have good fruit or bad fruit. And he's claiming to have good fruit here. He has the words of truth, and he's able to show him by other actions that he's had that he is somebody worthwhile, that he is a servant of God. And certainly as Christians, we need to be able to show that by the things that we're saying, that we understand this principle. That we understand that the things that we're saying really reflect our produce or our product. Sometimes we try to have good product. We try to look good and we put on this nice front and facade, kind of like a veneer. Your tooth might be all messed up, but if you have like something nice covering it up, it looks good, right? Well, we try to do that sometimes with ourselves, and we try to tell people that we're good or we act good in some situations, but really the things that we're saying day to day and the way that we present ourselves in our speech really says otherwise, and it says that we have bad fruit. It says that we don't take that seriously, and this is a principle that I believe Matthew chapter 12, and we'll talk more about this, really hits on and tries to get us to understand. The second point is that words come from what is in the heart. If you would turn back to Matthew chapter 12, and if you haven't marked that passage, feel free to go ahead and do that because we'll keep coming back here. Matthew chapter 12, and we'll pick up in verse 34. You brood of vipers, and he's talking to the scribes and Pharisees specifically in this text. How can you, being evil, speak what is good? For the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. And here's kind of, if you'll allow me to say this, the heart of the matter. This is really what shows you the reason for why something bears the fruit it does. Because really what's on the inside of it is going to produce the fruit. And if the inside of that tree, if we're going to continue with that illustration, is bad, then the fruit is going to be bad. And our words reflect that. he says that the scribes and Pharisees specifically here are evil. So there's not a possibility of the things they're saying being really truly good. Because the things they're saying at best are going to be hypocritical if they're saying good things, condemning themselves. That's a principle that we as the church, as Christ's redeemed, have to really understand. If you would, just a page over or so in Matthew chapter 15, verse 18, Jesus, again, in this context, is dealing with really the root issue that people typically have, and that's our hearts. If you would pick up in verse 18 of chapter 15, but the things that proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and those defile a man. In this context, Jesus is really refuting some traditions of men where, you know, man is defiled simply because he doesn't wash the way he's supposed to. If you read that context, that's really what he's getting at. But the idea here and the imagery that he's using is of words. He says, you know, really what defiles a man isn't so much of what's on the outside. It's really what's on the inside, and that's the heart of that man. But words, as we can see from these two contexts, really are a good picture or portrait of what's on the inside. And we can see that in Colossians chapter 3. If you would turn to Colossians chapter 3, verses 8 through 11, we'll begin in verse 8. Colossians chapter 3, verse 8. But now you also put them all aside, anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices and have put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. A renewal in which there is no distinction between Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, and freeman, but Christ is all and in all. The last example that we used to show the first point was Paul himself. He said, you know, I'm a servant of God. Look at the words of truth that I'm speaking. I'm bearing good fruit among you. But in this context, I believe the example is supposed to be us. Words come from what is in the heart, and if we are truly changing in Christ, then we've put on this new man and we've really begun to renew our hearts, or as this says, put on the new man. We really have to understand this, because if we don't really renew ourselves to a true knowledge, and if you look back in verse 8, you see a lot of things that have to deal with the way our mouths are used. In verse 8, anger, and maybe we can see some application to our mouths there. Wrath, certainly there. Malice, slander, specifically is something involved in your mouth. Abusive speech, all need to be put away from your mouth. And he continues to give reason, because the new self is being renewed to the true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. And that renewal is to make us different, is to purify our hearts, is to make us change what's inside of us so what is on the outside of us is completely different as well. Sometimes I feel like we have that backwards. When we decide to put on Christ, and maybe this is due to immaturity or lack of understanding on our part when we first come to Christ, we really work on the outside first. We really work on cleaning up our act and parting our hair and putting on our ties and making sure we're there right at 9 o'clock in the morning. Or maybe we do some really outward things. We just like hold back that word of anger in that moment. But in our heart, really nothing's different. We're still saying all those things. We're still doing all the things we were doing before. We just kind of try to hide it now. But Jesus, specifically in Matthew chapter 12, tells us that the things that we say are a reflection of our heart. So our heart is really where we need to do the work. And as Christians, we have to understand that. And understand that our heart is really the key to changing the way we speak. The third thing, if you would, turn back to Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12. Every word is accounted for. Look down in verse 36. But I tell you that every careless word that people speak, they shall give an accounting for it in the day of judgment. So Jesus again reveals something else that maybe we don't know or haven't known until this point about our words. And certainly hopefully we understand that God is all-knowing. Nothing can slip through God and get by Him without Him knowing about it. But sometimes, at least for me, it takes something explicitly being said for it to really sink in. I know, God, nothing gets by you and you see everything. But sometimes I need to hear that every careless word that I speak, I will have to give an account for. You know, maybe sometimes, if you're like me, it's not till that moment that I really think about, oh man, I need to be really careful about what I say. Jesus tells us that nothing gets by God, and that is included in our speech. You know, the 20,000 words that you say every day, God hears every single one of them and doesn't forget one. That's incredible to me. But God is capable of doing that. And He promises, not only is He capable of doing that, but that He will do that. And He will remember those things. If you look in Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, we'll pick up in verse 3. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 3. But immorality or any impurity or greed must not even be named among you as is proper among saints. And there must be no filthiness and silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know with certainty that no immoral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater has an inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. And the reason I want to point this verse out is because it specifically talks about some of the negative ways we could be using our words. But not so much just that, is that it concludes in verse 5 that those people are immoral and impure, and then it goes on to even further conclude that those kind of people don't have an inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. So not only will God make us give an account of those things that we say, but those things that we say can really defile us, defile our hearts, as we talked about just a minute ago, and can keep us from going into heaven. Every single word that you say is important because God remembers it. It's important on a lot of levels, certainly because it can encourage or destroy brethren. It can encourage or destroy yourself, depending on what you're saying. But it also is important purely because it can keep us from going to heaven. An example of this is Acts chapter 4, verse 36. We almost don't even have to turn here, but we will, just because I want one small part of this. Look at this description given in Acts chapter 4, in verse 36. Now Joseph, a Levite of Cyprian birth, who was also called Barnabas by the apostles, which translated means son of encouragement. It sounds like Barnabas took this really seriously. I mean, his name, I don't know if you guys even know that his name is Joseph. I don't know that until I read it. I think I relearn that every time I read that, because nobody calls him Joseph. If you had asked me, like, 3 days ago, what's Barnabas' name? I always said, well, Barnabas. But his name's Joseph, but the apostles called him something different. They called him, really, a description. He was so encouraging and he took his words seriously and used them appropriately and positively that he became Barnabas. And he became the son of encouragement. And I think that's really important because Barnabas understood that his words mattered and that God would take into account the things he was saying. We have to do the exact same thing. We have to understand that our words are important. And though we don't tally up our words every day and say, you know, I'm at 19,999, I should probably slow down. We need to make sure that the words we are using are thought out and that we are able to give an account for those words. Say, this is the reason I use that, and this is the purpose behind it when God asks. And the last thing that I see that I feel is important for us to understand in Matthew chapter 12 is that words can save or destroy us. We've hit on this a little bit, but I'd like to look back at Matthew chapter 12 again. Matthew chapter 12, and really we'll read the last verse here, verse 37. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. I talked about this a little bit from Ephesians chapter 5, verse 3, how our words can keep us from entering into the kingdom. But Jesus shows us here that our words can also justify us. You know, our words can also be a proof for us to God that we were taking Him seriously, that we were trying to do what's right. Look in James chapter 2. James chapter 2. We'll pick up in verse 2. If you're familiar with James, you know that he talks a lot about the way we use our mouths. Specifically, he words it as the tongue. And primarily, it seems to be in a negative sense, because it's more of a warning about how to use your mouth. But we'll read verses 2 through 6. For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. Now, if we put the bits into the horses' mouths so that they will obey us, we direct their entire body as well. Look at the ships also, that they, though they are so great and are driven by strong winds, are still directed by a very small rudder, wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. So also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. See how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body. It sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. In this context, James seems to be really warning about teaching false things, and we have to be careful about what we say, and teachers have more responsibility in that. But I feel like the principles certainly apply to everybody. I mean, the tongue on a teacher isn't so much more inherently dangerous than the tongue on anyone else. It's not anatomically different from your tongue or his tongue or her tongue. The way we use our mouth is generally the same among everybody. Now, teachers have a greater influence, possibly, because they're speaking to large groups. I don't know if you guys would believe me if I said crazy things anyway, but I could, and I'd at least have a crowd to hear it. But the tongue here needs to be taken seriously, and certainly we can see the negative aspect in these verses about the tongue. You know, a big ship gets led by a very small piece of equipment, the rudder, and he uses that as an illustration. Well, certainly we can be misguided by our tongue, and we can use our tongues poorly, but look in James chapter 2, verse 2, he really says it can be used for good as well. For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. So there's also a positive aspect. Sure, we stumble in a lot of ways, but if you can learn to control your tongue and the words that you're saying and using, then really you've done the hardest thing and you can control your whole body. I think we all understand that, because if you're anything like me or like everyone that I've known, it's really easy to kind of have a slip of the tongue, as our expression goes. Some emotion gets the best of you, and just out it comes right then and there. if we can learn to really control that by, as we've talked about, changing what's in our hearts, we can change our whole body's action. We can bridle our whole body. Words can save or destroy us. Look in verses 9 through 12 of this same exact chapter. Here's an example. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come both blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not be this way. Does a fountain send out from the same opening both fresh and bitter water? Can a fig tree, my brethren, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Nor can salt water produce fresh. The example here that I would like us to look at of this principle is the way that we address God or we address each other. You know, our same mouth, the same exact tools that we use to bless God can be used to curse God. Or the same exact tools that we use to encourage each other can be used to destroy each other. And certainly James makes the argumentation that really our mouths need to be pure to something. It needs to be one way or the other. He uses the illustration of our mouth, you know, producing or water producing both salt water and fresh water. It doesn't make sense. That's not how it works. And so our mouths are supposed to be the same way. We're supposed to produce what is good. Four things that we see in Matthew chapter 12. And we see really reflected in each one of these points, all of them. But specifically, we see that the tree is known by its fruit. Words come from what is in the heart. Every word is accounted for, and those words can either save or destroy us. As Christ's local body here at Jordan Park, I get to thinking about places or areas that we can really work on. Usually those reflect areas that I feel me or people immediately around me need to work on, and I see a deficiency or, what's the other word? Not a deficiency, but extra amount of. Usually if I see someone doing really well in an area, that encourages me to do well in that area. Or if I see a shortcoming in an area, it encourages me to work on that area as well. And I'd really encourage us to take this seriously. Take these four points and really think about them, because it's exactly what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 12. If you think that I've stretched any of these points, feel free to talk to me about it and we can discuss that. But I feel like every single one of these points are made very clearly in Matthew chapter 12. And there's something that we have to live by and apply. And we can certainly see each one of these points reflected in a lot of places throughout the New Testament. If Jordan Park were to be defined by something, particularly regarding the way we treat each other and the way we speak, what would it be? If you were to ask anyone who knew people here or people who had experience with this group, what would that be? Would that be that the people here took this seriously and spoke the way that God calls us to speak, not only to Him, but to each other, and we took these principles seriously? Or would it be that we were not doing that? That maybe we weren't loving, we didn't bless God, we didn't bless each other, that we didn't really think our words were that important, and we didn't think we would have an account for our words before God? You know, people can see that. And in your specific life, in your day-to-day dealings with people, do people know you by these kinds of principles? Do people see somebody who thinks through what they say and applies these principles to their words? Or do they see somebody who just flippantly says whatever's on your mind, and you don't guard it, and you don't work on your heart, and you don't change, and you're just like everybody else? Because each one of us needs to look different from our words. And Jesus says just that in chapter 12 of Matthew. I'd encourage all of us to take this seriously. Look through your lives, see that there's areas that you could work on, and purify yourselves of that. Make your heart right, work on your heart, and change yourself so that whatever proceeds out of your heart is good and pure. If there's somebody here this morning that has never put on Christ, we have not specifically talked about that this morning, but certainly that invitation is always open for anyone who feels the need to do that. God is always willing and able to save you. We'd ask that you come while we stand and sing.